Good evening. I'm Nick Vial, and some of you may know me from The Bachelor. I'm really looking forward to reading you a sleep story tonight that will help you unwind, relax, and drift off into dreamland. The story is a classic tale of love between a prince and a princess. It's called Sleeping Beauty. Make sure you're feeling comfortable. Cozy down under the covers and take a few deep breaths. If you're ready, I shall begin. Once upon a time, there lived a king and queen who were grieved, more grieved than words could tell, because they had no children. They tried the waters of every country, made vows and pilgrimages, and did everything that could be done, but without result. At last, however, the queen found that her wishes were fulfilled, and in due course, she gave birth to a daughter. A grand christening was held, and all the fairies that could be found in the realm, they numbered 7 in all, were invited to be godmothers to the little princess. This was done so that, by means of the gifts which each in turn would bestow upon her, in accordance with the fairy custom of those days, the princess might be endowed with every imaginable perfection. When the christening ceremony was over, all the company returned to the king's palace, where a great banquet was held in honor of the fairies. Places were laid for them in magnificent style, and before each was placed a solid gold box containing a spoon, fork, and knife of fine gold set with diamonds and rubies. But just as all were sitting down to table, another fairy was seen to enter, whom no one had thought to invite. The reason being that for more than 50 years, she had never left the tower in which she lived, and people had supposed her to be dead or bewitched. By the king's orders, a place was laid for her, but it was impossible to give her a golden box like the others, for only 7 had been made for the 7 fairies. The old creature believed that she was intentionally slighted and muttered angrily under her breath. She was overheard by one of the young fairies, who was seated nearby. The latter, guessing that some mischievous gift might be bestowed upon the princess, hid behind the tapestry as soon as the company left the table. Her intention was to be the last to speak, and so to have the power of counteracting, as far as possible, any harm which the old fairy might do. Presently, the fairies began to bestow their gifts upon the princess. The youngest ordained that she might be the most beautiful person in the world. The next, that she should have the temper of an angel. The third, that she should do everything with wonderful grace. The fourth, that she should dance to perfection. The fifth, that she should sing like a nightingale. And the sixth, that she should play every kind of music with the utmost skill. It was now the turn of the other fairy, shaking her head in token of spite rather than infirmity. She declared that the princess should prick her hand with a spindle and fall into an eternal slumber. A shudder ran through the company at the terrible gift. All eyes were filled with tears. But at this moment, the young fairy stepped forth from behind the tapestry. "Take comfort, your majesties," she cried in a loud voice. "My power, it is true, is not enough to undo all that my kinswoman has decreed. The princess will indeed prick her hand with a spindle, but instead of an eternal sleep, she shall merely fall into a profound slumber that will last 100 years, and at the end of that time, a king's son shall come to awaken her." The king, In an attempt to avert the unhappy doom pronounced by the old fairy, at once published an edict forbidding all persons to use a spinning wheel or keep a spindle in the house. At the end of 15 or 16 years, the king and queen happened one day to be away on a trip. The princess was running about the castle and going upstairs from room to room. She came at length to a garret at the top of a tower, where an old serving woman sat alone with her distaff spinning. This woman had never heard speak of the king's proclamation forbidding the use of spinning wheels. "What are you doing, my good woman?" asked the princess. "I'm spinning, my pretty child," replied the dame, not knowing who she was. "Oh, what fun," rejoined the princess. "How do you do it? Let me try and see if I could do it equally well." Partly because she was too hasty, partly because she was a little heedless, but also because the fairy decree had ordained it, no sooner had she seized the spindle than she pricked her hand and fell down in a swoon. In great alarm, the good dame cried out for help. People came running from every quarter to the princess. They threw water on her face, chafed her with their hands, and rubbed her temples with the royal essence of Hungary, but nothing would restore her. Then the king, who had been brought upstairs by the commotion, remembered the fairy prophecy. Feeling certain that what had happened was inevitable, since the fairies had decreed it, he gave orders that the princess should be placed in the finest apartment in the palace, upon a bed embroidered in gold and silver. You would have thought her an angel, so fair was she to behold. The trance had not taken away the lovely color of her complexion. Her cheeks were delicately flushed, her lips like coral. Her eyes, indeed, were closed. But her gentle breathing could be heard, and it was therefore plain that she was alive. The king commanded that she should be left to sleep in peace until the hour of her awakening should come. When the accident happened to the princess, the good fairy who had saved her life by condemning her to sleep 100 years was in the kingdom of Mataquin, 12,000 leagues away. She was instantly warned of it, however, by a little dwarf who had a pair of 7-league boots, which are boots that enable one to cover 7 leagues at a single step. The fairy set off at once, and within an hour her chariot of fire, drawn by dragons, was seen approaching. The king handed her down from her chariot, and she approved of all that he had done. But being gifted with the great powers of foresight, she bethought herself when the princess came to be awakened. She would be much distressed to find herself all alone in the old castle, and this is what she did. She touched with her wand everybody, except the king and queen, who was in the castle. Governesses, maids of honor, ladies in waiting, gentlemen, officers, stewards, cooks, scullions, errand boys, guards, porters, pages, footmen. She touched likewise all the horses in the stables with their grooms, the big mastiffs in the courtyard, and the little Puff, the pet dog of the princess who was lying on the bed beside his mistress. The moment she had touched them, they all fell asleep, to awaken only at the same moment as their mistress. Thus they would always be ready with their service whenever she should require it. The very spits before the fire, loaded with partridges and pheasants, subsided into slumber, and the fire as well. All was done in a moment, for the fairies do not take long over their work. Then the king and queen kissed their dear child without waking her and left the castle. Proclamations were issued forbidding any approach to it, but these warnings were not needed, for within a quarter of an hour, there grew up all around the park so vast a quantity of trees, big and small, with interlacing brambles and thorns, that neither man nor beast could penetrate them. The tops alone of the castle towers could be seen, and these only from a distance. Thus did the fairy's magic contrive that the princess, during all the time of her slumber, should have not whatever to fear from prying eyes. At the end of 100 years, the throne had passed to another family from that of the sleeping princess. One day the king's son chanced to go a-hunting that way, and seeing in a distance some towers in the midst of a large and dense forest, he asked what they were. His attendants told him in reply the various stories which they had heard. Some said there was an old castle haunted by ghosts. Others that all the witches of the neighborhood held their revels there. The favorite tale was that in the castle lived an ogre who carried thither all the children whom he could catch. Since he was the only person who could force a passage through the wood, nobody had been able to pursue him. While the prince was wondering what to believe, an old peasant took up the tale. "Your Highness," he said, "more than 50 years ago I heard my father say that in this castle lies a princess, the most beautiful that has ever been seen. It is her doom to sleep there 100 years, and then be awakened by a king's son, for whose coming she waits." This story fired the young prince. He jumped immediately to the conclusion that it was for him to see such an adventure through, and impelled alike by the wish for love and glory, he resolved to set about it on the spot. Hardly had he taken a step towards the wood when the tall trees, the brambles and the thorns, separated of themselves and made a path for him. He turned in the direction of the castle, and espied it at the end of a long avenue. This avenue he entered, and was surprised to notice that the trees closed up again as soon as he had passed, so that none of his retinue were able to follow him. A young and gallant prince is always brave, however, so he continued on his way, and presently reached a large forecourt. The sight that now met his gaze was enough to fill him with an icy fear. The silence of the place was dreadful. The recumbent figures of men and animals had all the appearance of being lifeless, until he perceived by the pimply noses and ruddy faces of the porters that they merely slept. It was plain, too, from their glasses, in which were still some dregs of wine, that they had fallen asleep while drinking. The prince made his way into a great courtyard, paved with marble, and mounting the staircase, entered the guard room. Here the guards were lined up on either side in two ranks, their muskets on their shoulders, snoring their hardest. Through several apartments crowded with ladies and gentlemen in waiting, some seated, some standing, but all asleep, he pushed on, and so came at last to a chamber which was decked all over with gold. There he encountered the most beautiful sight he had ever seen. Reclining upon a bed, the curtains of which on every side were drawn back, was a princess of seemingly some 15 or 16 summers, whose radiant beauty had an almost unearthly luster. Trembling in his admiration, he drew near and went on his knees beside her. At the same moment, the hour of disenchantment having come, the princess awoke and bestowed upon him a look more tender than a first glance might seem to warrant. "Is it you, dear prince?" she said. "You have been long in coming." Charmed by these words, and especially by the manner in which they were said, the prince scarcely knew how to express his delight and gratification. He declared that he loved her better than he loved himself. His words were faltering, but they pleased the more for that. The less there is eloquence, the more there is love. Her embarrassment was less than his, and that is not to be wondered at, since she had time to think of what she would say to him. It seems, although the story says nothing about it, that the good fairy had beguiled her long slumber with pleasant dreams. To be brief, after 4 hours of talking, they had not succeeded in uttering one half of the things they had to say to each other. Now the whole palace had awakened with the princess. Everyone went about his business, and since they were not all in love, they presently began to feel mortally hungry. The lady-in-waiting, who was suffering like the rest, at length lost patience, and in a loud voice called out to the princess that supper was served. The princess was already fully dressed and in the most magnificent style. As he helped her to rise, the prince refrained from telling her that her clothes, with the straight collar which she wore, were like those to which his grandmother had been accustomed, and in truth, they in no way detracted from her beauty. They passed into an apartment hung with mirrors, and were there served with supper by the stewards of the household. While the fiddles and oboes played some old music, and played it remarkably well, considering they had not played at all for just upon 100 years. A little later, when supper was over, the chaplain married them in the castle chapel, and in due course, attended by the courtiers in waiting, they retired to rest.